Hi, I'm a helpful Southern California Honda person, and recently we've been doing random acts of helpfulness, like getting a service dog for a child in need and buying science materials for a third grade class. And we can help you too with a great deal on an award-winning Honda, like the reliable and completely redesigned Accord, the 2018 North American Car of the Year. Click the dealer locator link to find a dealer near you and go to SoCalHondaDealers.com to suggest a random act of helpfulness for someone you know.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, folks. How you doing? It's Danny Tisdale, and you're listening to the Danny Tisdale Show. And as we do each and every week and each and every day for the most part, we try to give you a great show with some of the great leaders and legends and trailblazers in Harlem. And we're doing the same today, of course. Now, before we get started, we want you to go to our platforms and check out our great content. One of those places you can do that is on twitter.com/HWMag. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/HWMag. And, of course, the big boy, our website at HarlemWorldMag.com and also HarlemWorldMagazine.com, where you can check out all the things that's going on in Harlem, around Harlem, wherever you may be. Of course, we've got a nice 20% of our audience is international, and we love that. But, of course, our hub that's right here in Harlem. And, you know, let's get started because we have another great guest. And we have on the show today Dr. Paul Fakowski. He's known as the godfather of oceanography. You know, I got to ask him about that and see where that comes from. He was born in Harlem. He was educated at City College of New York, where he received his BSc and his MSc degrees. He completed his doctoral thesis in biology and biophysics at the University of British Columbia in 1975. After doctoral research at University of Rhode Island, he moved to Brookhaven National Laboratory to join his newly formed oceanography department. And in 1998, he moved to Rutgers University. He received the Guggenheim Fellowship in 1992 and was appointed as Cecil and Ida Green Distinguished Professor at the University of British Columbia in 1996. He was elected to a number of learned societies, including the American Geophysical Union, the American Academy of the Arts and Sciences, the National Academy of Sciences. He also received a number of awards, including the A.G. Hutzman Award of Excellence in Marine Sciences. You know what, guys, girls, ladies, and gentlemen who are listening, Dr. Fakowski has done tons of work, and in 2018, this year, he was nominated as recipient of the Tyler Prize of Environmental Achievement for his work on photoplankton as it relates to climate change impact. He shares the 2018 Tyler Prize with fellow biological oceanographer Dr. James McCarthy of Harvard University. He works at the Department of Marine and Coastal Sciences at Rutgers University. He's doing his influential research on critical role of the Earth's smallest life forms in the evolution of our modern climate. Dr. Fakowski's research lab is one of the top labs worldwide for biological oceanography. And, Doctor, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
Really fantastic to have you on the show for two big reasons on my part, which is first, one of my subjects that I love, which is climate change, and of course you're from Harlem, so it's heaven on earth for me right now. And again, I want to thank you and congratulate you on winning the Tyler Prize, you and the other doctor.
And Jim McCarthy. Yeah. Thank you, Jim McCarthy.
I just want to let our listeners know that you will officially be presented the Tyler Prize in a ceremony at Washington, D.C. on May 3rd, 2018. I'm sorry, go ahead, right ahead.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, a few years ago, I was on a French television show. And they came to for 1 week to film me.
Wow.
And I went back to 3150 Broadway, the Grant Housing Projects, where I grew up for for 15 years. And it was, you know, it brought me back to where I grew up as a kid. And I went to PS 125, which is on 123rd Street at Morningside Drive. And then I went to Junior High School 43. So I spent my formative years in schools in Harlem. And I got a great education from teachers.
Yeah, and it sounds like it, Doctor. And I wanted to use kind of the opening question to kind of lay the foundation for the rest of what we'll talk about. And part of it is what you just mentioned. How does a kid from Harlem become an award-winning biologist? You know, and I kind of laugh and snicker, but I mean, I know how it happens, but can you tell those listeners, you know, how that happens?
Well, I think when you're a kid, you have a lot of interests. Some kids have a lot of interests. And my father used to take me about every second week on a Saturday to the Museum of Natural History. And then I would also go to the George Bruce Library on 125th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam. And I would read, and I would the funny thing is, it's serendipitous in a way. A couple of graduate students at Columbia who were living in my building were growing tropical fish. And I went, when I was around 8 years old, to their house. And they gave me a 2.5 gallon fish tank and some guppies. And I started to really, really become interested in growing tropical fish. And I worked after school when I was starting at around 12 years old. And I saved I made $1.05 an hour. Maybe it was $1.05 an hour. But I used to go, there was a tropical fish store on the north side of 125th Street, across from the Grant Housing Project, no longer there. But I used to hang out there and save my money up and buy fish and breed fish. And then I got a used microscope, and I started to look at the fish eggs and the organisms that were living in the fish tanks. And I started to get really interested in it because it was fun. So to me, you know, the worst thing about studying biology is it can be very boring if you're in class. But if you're learning about life experientially, you're experiencing your microscope or something like this, then it's great. So there used to be what's called a foldoscope, which was $1. it could magnify 140 times. It was invented by a Stanford engineer, Manu Prakash. It's called a foldoscope, an origami
foldoscope.
You put it together yourself.
Wow.
And we gave every kid in New York City in the third grade one of those scopes, I think it would be transformative. So there's something that Mike Blumenthal might be able to do with his money.
That's right.
I mean, it's only costing him a few $100,000 a year. I don't know how many kids we have in third grade, but in New York, but it can't be that many.
So, I think you're completely right on that.
So to figure out, you know, what's in the water in your pond when it rains, there are many, many things you can do with a microscope.
Certainly so.
And the other things to think about are within Harlem. I mean, if you're looking around, you see these rocks, for example, in Morningside Park or Central Park, which is in the northern end of southern end of Harlem, 110th Street. So those rocks are what's called gneisses. They're metamorphic rocks. So it just tells you something about the history of the age of New York's environment. Our rock record goes back about 400 million years. To study a little bit of the environment in which you live, it can be a lot of fun.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And I think you're right on. And, of course, as listeners can tell, there's something ringing in the background here. But that's certainly okay. Let's see if I can take care of that some way. Very embarrassing. But, you know, what I wanted to also ask you, And hopefully we can have some of our tech folks take care of that in the background there. I'm sorry. Okay, there we go. You know, I wanted to also ask you, Doctor, I'm really curious about this. Did you have a, you know, when the clouds open and the sunshine shine in moment when you said, you know what, I'm on the right track here?
That came, well, I had a very tough time in high school. I went to Brooklyn Tech, which is an all-boys high school, and I didn't take any biology courses. So when I got to City College and I started to get more interested in science again, I was taking chemistry and biology, and there was one faculty member, a young faculty member in biology at City College, who was an oceanographer who had just been hired. And he, when I was in my third year, he invited me to go to sea. Go to sea meaning spending 2 or 3 days out in, on a small boat that we had at City in New York Harbor.
Out on sea.
And I started to really get excited about looking at the phytoplankton. My microscope was, you know, I took a microscope with me. And I sampled the water, and I could easily see these microscopic organisms that are responsible for making the oxygen on the planet and fixing the carbon dioxide so they can convert themselves to another cell. And those cells are eaten by microzooplankton that are eaten by fish that are making the world go round in the ocean. So I started to delve into that very seriously for my PhD later on. And I've been working on it more or less ever since. So there was one day that the sun shined, and it was when I walked out to a boat for the first time.
And it was shining on the sea. I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, people go back and forth regarding the issue of, you know, climate change. Let me edge into this. We all know something is changing, and it's the climate. Is the climate worse or better than we think, Doctor?
Well, it's actually a little bit I don't want to make a value judgment worse or better, but it's certainly in a trajectory of warming very rapidly compared to what we know from the geologic past. So there is no question that this is due to the emissions of carbon dioxide from burning of fossil fuel. And that began with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in the early part of the 19th century.
In the last century.
Was James Watt who invented a coal-fired steam engine, and then, of course, electricity was developed in New York City. Actually, it was developed in Brooklyn first by Thomas Alva Edison and the city of Brooklyn. It was not yet incorporated into the city of New York.
The borough, right. Yeah.
The borough. As an amusement for your listeners, maybe, the city of Brooklyn had trolleys that would run on electricity. And these trolleys every once in a while would arc with a huge lightning bolt of electricity that would come out and occasionally hit somebody and kill them. And so when these trolleys would go up and down the streets of Flatbush and so on, people would jump out of the way. And that's why we got the name the Brooklyn Dodgers.
No.
So, That's where the Brooklyn Dodgers came from. They were dodging the sparks from trolleys.
Wow.
Which is kind of – so in any event
– very amazing. Great story.
We have now 7.5 billion people on the planet, and in the United States we have an extremely high consumption of carbon, the highest in the world per capita, quite highest, but it's the highest in the world per capita for a developed country – next to Singapore and possibly Qatar.
It's amazing.
So you have to think, it's amazing, right? So you have to think about this. Every time we burn a gallon of gasoline, 1 gallon, approximately 20 pounds of carbon dioxide is emitted from the tailpipe. And that goes into the atmosphere.
It's pretty
odorless, clear, odorless gas, and it absorbs infrared radiation from the sun, which is... a little bit is a good thing, too much of it, too fast, and you start to melt ice caps. And that's exactly what we're doing all around the
world. What's happening now? Right, exactly.
So I spent 7 weeks at sea in the Antarctic last year. Many of my colleagues are going to the Arctic this year. And in the middle of the summer, the Arctic Ocean this year probably will have the least amount of ice cover in any year. And we've just this trajectory has been going on for decades. So ice is melting all over the world. And this is the first real indication that something is amiss. When you have ice that has been stable for hundreds of thousands of years in the Himalayas. Hundreds of thousands of years. And all of a sudden, Bhutan will lose virtually all of its ice. This is Bhutan is next to Nepal. It's one of the highest countries in the world. They harvest that water as it melts in the summer to generate electricity for India. They export electricity, basically. But they don't generate the ice in the winter as they used to. And so they're losing that capacity. And many other countries in the world also are losing high altitude ice, not just ice.
Right.
They're losing in Peru,
right.
in the Andes. Okay. It's a big problem.
Well,
so this,
and Doctor,
this
I want to come
gets to a rise in sea level.
Doctor, right, I just
so
want to interrupt you for a quick second and let our listeners know they're listening to the Danny Tisdale Show. And I'm, of course, Danny Tisdale on Harlem World Magazine Radio. And as you know, we're the number one company in the world for all things Harlem. And we are having what I think is a great conversation. And it's a conversation that is long overdue. As Dr. Fukowski's talking about it, I'm going to put the numbers out there. Of course, in 150 years, we're losing something we've had for centuries. And I'm curious, Doctor, what can we do locally in Harlem to keep climate change at bay if we can?
Well, it's going to be a problem severalfold. So 125th Street is one of the lowest points in the city, as you know. That's why you have an elevated train that runs
right
up the Broadway line.
Right.
So at some point, as sea level rises, there's going to have to be walls that are going to be built along the Hudson and East River near up between probably around 116th Street and 130th Street, where you get hills
come on,
again.
Doctor. No.
Yes.
Walls built?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're going to have some way of keeping, you know, otherwise you're going to have a river
the water
out running through the city, right through the middle of Harlem. I mean, we're talking about massive rises in sea level over the next century.
Right.
We're talking about
right.
10 feet approximately, 6 to 10 feet of sea level rise. So
in
this
100
is going
years.
To totally change in 100 years.
Wow.
In 100 years. So this
you
is
know,
why
I think
we're
visually,
talking about it,
so I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it used to be. I'm going. So that's really where one of the most vulnerable spots in New York City, except for Lower Manhattan.
I didn't know
well.
That. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And visually, you know, I'm just imagining what this looks like in my head. And all I can say is, wow, that's incredible and astonishing.
Yeah. It is. It's hard to imagine. It is very hard to
can
imagine.
Can we do that anything between now and that
yeah.
time so that, that doesn't happen?
Well, obviously, there are many attempts across the world. When this was what the Paris Accord was to do, was to reduce
right.
very dramatically the amount of carbon that is emitted across the planet. And the culprit, the number one concern all around the world is electricity generation using fossil fuels. So
right.
we have old coal power plants, which are hardly used anymore in the United States, it's at least on the eastern seaboard, until you get to Pennsylvania. They're hardly used. They're backup generators for PSE&G in New Jersey. There's a few of them that are back up still, I believe, for Con Edison, but mostly Con Edison has switched over to natural gas, which is still a fossil fuel.
Right. I'm still stunned by what you were saying seconds ago, and you know, would love to kind of continue talking about that. I just want to make sure I had that, have this clear in my head. You said 125th Street and 135th Street, there would have to be walls built unless something dramatic happens because of the rise of the sea level. You said that was 125th and 135th Streets? Oh, hello, Dr. Fikowski. Dr. Fikowski. Well, folks, I want to apologize. For some reason, we have lost our connection with Dr. Fikowski, and let's see if we can get him back.
Okay,
on
I'm
the
here.
Line. Dr. Fikowski.
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm on a train. So I guess the phone line just dropped out. I'm on my way to Washington,
D.C.
I
think the water levels have already started to rise and it's interrupting our conversation here. But I was just quickly wanted to just ask you, just in case some of the listeners missed this, you were talking, was that the water level affecting 125th Street and 135th Street, those two major
streets? No, 125th
streets, or?
Street, but it would start at the top of the hill is 116th Street. The bottom of the valley is 125th Street. The top of the hill on the other side is 137th Street. So you have these two hills that have this valley in the middle.
Amazing.
And that's what will be flooded if water level gets up another few feet higher.
That's amazing. And I know the clock is ticking, and I have a few more questions for you. What advice, Dr. Fikowski, would you give young kids who really want to follow in your bio shoes, per se?
Young kids. I think young kids should do something experimentally, so they should be able to either get a small microscope for the dollar if they can, or borrow one from school. They should tell a science teacher or a teacher, even in second and third grade, how interested they are in science. And I think one of the things that and this can be done in a very nice way. So I know throughout Harlem, Teachers College sends student teachers
Columbia.
Into the classroom. And if you were to try to get student teachers to introduce students to scientific experiments that they can do themselves, I think that would be the best way to get a kid interested. They need a little bit of guidance from an adult,
right?
Because otherwise they're lost. And the first thing to do is to just go on Facebook or YouTube and just look at movies. You don't want to just look at movies. You want to do something with your hands, right?
Right.
You want to be able to dissect or look under the microscope at an insect's wing or an insect's eye. You want to be able to watch ants as they build their nests. You don't just kill the ants. Why don't you take a bunch of ants and put them in a little box in a sandbox and watch them build their nests?
Right.
And, you know, obviously you have an incredible resource, the Museum of Natural History. Just a phenomenal resource. So every kid can, for, you know, price of the subway fare, get to the Museum of Natural History. And you don't have to go with your class. You can go with your friends.
And explore
it.
Well, I was just going to say that those are great ideas. I'm sorry, and go ahead.
Well, I think that the museum is set up. I'm on the faculty of the museum as well. But we curate the exhibits to engage children specifically. That's what it's curated for. It's not just to be an educational resource. It's there to both be educational and entertaining and drive some curiosity for the kids. I mean, you have incredible people in New York City that grew up
That's
in the city, like Neil deGrasse Tyson is a friend, you know. he also, you know, grew up poor and
right.
And he didn't grow up in Harlem, but he went to Bronx.
Yeah, I think he grew up in New Jersey. Yeah.
But you know, I'm pretty sure he went to Bronx Science. He was in New York.
Oh, did he?
At least
okay.
When he was a teenager. So, but it's getting kids to build little clubs or do things together.
Mm-hmm.
And to have fun doing it. It should be
right.
fun. Science
right.
should be fun.
Right.
It doesn't have to be biology. It doesn't have to be, you know, kids like physics, kids like, you know, why does the top spin, for example? Why doesn't it
right.
fall down? Why does a bicycle
right.
go? Why does it fall down when it stops? And if it keeps moving, and you'll stay
right.
upright on it.
Right.
So these kinds of
right.
things, just very simple things that kids, you know, they experience all the time, but they don't
right.
sometimes don't think about it, right?
Right, and meeting the kids, it sounds like what you're saying, meeting the kids where they are and then trying to get them to get excited about science and the sciences.
Exactly. Exactly. And
Doctor,
you can do a lot of science, actually, in your kitchen, in a kitchen. You whip up eggs, and you can say, why are the eggs, when I whip them up, why do they make a meringue? And it doesn't go back to a liquid.
Hmm.
In fact, it's hard to
asking those questions
that way.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially with everyday things that kids are doing and having them ask questions about those everyday activities. Doctor, we're already at our last few minutes here. I could continue this conversation because it's great, great stuff, and I haven't asked you all the questions I want to ask you. But if our listeners, which I know they do, and especially their kids and those who are just excited as I am about the work that you're doing, can stay in touch with you. You have a website or any kind of URL handles that our listeners can stay in contact with you and see what you're doing and how you're doing it?
Sure. Well, we have a couple of websites. We have
marine.rutgers.edu.
Okay. And there you can find all kinds of stuff. And then I run the Rutgers Energy Institute. So that's www.rei.rutgers.edu, RUTGERS.edu, REI,
fabulous.
Rutgers Energy Institute.
And when, Doctor, we post this on the website, we will post those URLs and website links that you mentioned. And, you know, also what we always like to find out, what is your favorite place in Harlem?
Wow. So it used to be, believe it or not, there was a barbecue place on Manhattan Avenue between 123rd and 124th Street, right around the corner from what – I don't even know if it's still there. Sydenham Hospital, right next to it, used to have a fire department next to it. And
wow.
That was a great place for me to visit. But there was this barbecue place where I, you know, that was – I grew up – you know, I'm not a black kid from Harlem, but I loved that – barbecue place. So I had collard greens and I had my grits and I was in heaven.
Yum.
It was yum. It was yum. My mother was horrified that I liked it, but I loved it.
Well, you know, you have me licking my lips over here because I'm just imagining, you know, a good old fashioned barbecue and collard greens. That's some good stuff right there.
It is.
Well, And Doctor, I want to thank you again for being on this call and talking to us about the great work that you're doing. And again, thank you, and congratulations to winning the award with I'm sorry, Dr. McCarthy, with Dr. James McCarthy and the 2018 Tyler Prize. Really, thank you for being on the show. And the world thanks you for the great work that you're doing. And thank you. Well, folks, it's been a quick show. And sorry for all the technical difficulties. And we'll improve that next time around, and really thank the doctor for being on the show. He's on the run to a gig, and really appreciate him taking the time to be out on the show. Thank you again, folks, for listening in, and we will talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Mm-hmm. Rediscover Cupid, Bacchus, Hermes, Medusa, and other beloved mythological heroes and gods at the Getty Villa, an enchanting recreation of an ancient Roman country house in a quiet canyon overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Discover masterpieces never before on view and explore the Getty Museum's Greek, Roman, and Etruscan treasures. The Getty Villa, located just 1 mile north of Sunset Boulevard on the Pacific Coast Highway. Reserve your free tickets today at getty.edu/villa.
The mighty blue marlin. You've battled for 2 solid hours. He jumps again. He's almost at the side of the boat. It's the moment of truth. Because there's never been a better time to test drive the 2018 Mercedes-Benz GLC. With a smooth 9-speed transmission, it loves to run. Set course for your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer. Visit mbusa.com/GLC to learn more. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.